I'm suiting up.
Welcome to Dr. 3, a Hearthstone podcast dedicated to giving you explosive growth and climbing the standard rank ladder. I'm your host, Daring Alkaline, and along with me are my fellow hosts, Nicolias and Major Death. So let's go into last week's poll question. Mage, you want to start us off?
Sure. So we asked you, what class do you think will emerge the strongest after the balance changes? And at the time of recording, we didn't know what the balance changes were, but you guys got to vote after knowing what they were. And 43.5% of the votes of the 23 that voted said Rogue was going to emerge the strongest class after the balance changes. 26.1 Hunter. And 21%, just under 22%, said other. We had a vote for Warrior. We had three votes saying, Shaman's still going to be really strong even after these balance changes. And then Mage got 8.7. And I almost feel bad that I suggested Mage as the one of the classes. But I don't know. I was thinking originally that Highlander Mage was actually doing pretty well the first couple days of the expansion. And I think it was. It just suddenly got outclassed pretty quickly by Shaman and Rogue and Hunter and that. And even the balance changes don't seem like they have done enough for it just yet.
Things have gotten aggressive up in here, so.
Because you can actually have minions on the board now, go figure.
What? That sounds like shenanigans to me. Anyways, let's move on to news. So the nerfs were announced and implemented last Thursday, hitting almost exclusively Shaman. So let's go through these first. So we got Corrupted Elementalist, was 5 mana, now costs 6. Everything else is the same. So it slows down Galkron Shaman quite a bit. We have Sludge Slurper went from 2 attack down to 1. Text is still the same. Pretty fair. We have Faceless Corruptor now has 4 attack down from 5, which is a big one. That affects everyone across the board. So I feel like that was a really much needed nerf too. And then Mogu Flesh Shaper now costs 9. So that I think that's probably the biggest one. Mogu was pretty abusive, and now he costs 9. I've seen him maybe twice since then. I've not seen a lot of Galakrond Shaman going around, so it's still there, but this kind of knocks him down a few pegs. And like we were just joking about, you can actually keep minions on the board now.
So the Corrupt Elementalist nerf is kind of what we expected, going up to 6 mana. The Sludge Slurper nerf kind of surprised a lot of people, but I think it was really important. It was basically Shaman's only turn 1 play in most of its decks, and now it does a lot less damage. It doesn't trade into totems and Lemur or anything like that, and it still overloads you, so it's almost just worse than the evil totem now. The Mogu Flesh Shaper, good nerf. I don't know why that thing was ever 7. But anyway. And then Faceless Corruptor is still seeing a ton of play.
Yeah.
It might be something they look at again. If they want to make it not as ubiquitous. They generally don't like to have, you know, one minion being played in every single deck, unless it's Zilliax for some reason. They seem to be okay with that.
They
like 5 mana taunts. Mm-hmm. They like taunts in the mid game, usually at the 5 mana spot. And there's been some over the years that they like the board tension. Those like 4 to 6 mana taunts end up providing in the game, and so it doesn't surprise me, I guess, that it does surprise me that this particular minion now is seeing that kind of level of play,
because it's still basically 8/8 rushing on turn 5, which is still, like, granted, it's significantly easier to deal with than, you know, 10-8, but yeah, it's still seeing a lot of play. I don't know if it's something they'd look at again, but that's probably something you disenchanted and then made again right away.
I feel realized it's still good. It's still good.
Yeah, it's still good. I feel like it's that nerf hit really well with that card. Like it doesn't. It still feels impactful, but it doesn't feel broken. So I mean, I like the change, and like I don't know what else they do to it. And I mean, I feel like a 4/4, you know, the 2/4/4s is fair for the 5 mana. Because you have to have another minion, you transform another minion into it. So, yes, I know you're only going to do that on something stupid, but you still have to have something on the board. I've played the game and not had something on turn 5, so the Faceless Corruptor sat in my hand unless I just wanted a 4/4 with Rush. So, I'm not saying it isn't really strong still. I feel like I don't know what else they would do to it, and I feel like they like it how it is, personally. Like, that's why I feel like the dev team probably thinks, like, oh, this is fine. And with 4-attack, it probably feels a lot better to me. I don't know. Do you guys have any input on that? Do you feel better about it at 4, or is it still enraging?
I could, like I said, if they were looking to nerf it again, which is mostly dependent on how much it gets played. It definitely doesn't feel as bad to get played against you. So it would probably strictly be just a play rate thing. And I feel like they could touch the health, bring it down to 3. Because if it's supposed to be this big thing, big swing turn, you know, having the bodies normally survive could be something that they look at and, you know, say that it's not okay. But I don't know if they will.
Okay.
It's okay right now. It's like I said, it's probably going to be going down to a play rate thing if they're happy with how much it's still getting played.
Yeah. So
I mean that was the comment about Azure Drake, right? It was the auto include at the 5 mana spot, and they wanted to open it up and give you something else to want to put in there by removing that as an option. And so I don't know that it's quite at that level, but it's been pretty close for the duration of this expansion so far. And so then the question is how long does it have to sit like that?
Not to go off topic or anything, but hashtag bring back Azure Drake. we have Big Ol' Whelp, and it is not seeing anywhere near the amount of play that Azure Drake was. I think you could bring it back in the kind of meta that is that they're putting out now. It would not be overpowered at all.
I'm on the hashtag bring back Sludge Slurper train. That's what I want to see. Oh, not the Sludge Slurper. Oh, God. What? I just got it confused. The 3/5.
Sludge Belcher. But that was Nax.
Yeah, I know.
Azure Drake was Hall of Fame. Come on.
I know. I still want the Sludge Belcher to come back. So
I like the fact that they looked at not just Galakrond Shaman with these changes. I mean, the Sludge Slurper, I think, specifically earmarks towards it wasn't always always include in Galakrond Shaman. I was seeing decks that weren't running Sludge Slurper, but it was a really good card in Aggro Shaman as well. Murloc Shaman, all, you know, this touches several different variations of Shaman because it was such a powerful card with it as it was. And I still don't necessarily agree that Corrupt Elementalist should go to 6 mana rather than remove the second invoke. But obviously, Nicolaius, you were correct in surmising what that change would actually be. But it still just feels weird that they get basically an extra minion that are, they basically have built into this card a second invoke that other classes don't have.
So let's move on here. More nerfs will be considered after the holidays. And this is from Dean Ayala. We wanted to get out a patch before holiday break. We get back around the 5th of January and we'll patch again soon after that time if necessary. More time to collect data. Death Rattle Rogue is fairly low population and dwindling win rate. And that was a thread with Frodan. So,
yeah, Frodan was talking about his impressions of the balance changes, and specifically talked about Necrium Apothecary and his concern about that particular card, and just ended up eliciting that response from Ixar. And so I thought it was kind of interesting that there was definitely a lot of talk about Necrium Apothecary and along those times when the balance changes were announced. And so I thought that was interesting. So we might see another round of balance changes. It's very possible.
And then Ixar again polled on Twitter on matchmaking. What if we adjusted matchmaking so you could never match up against the same class twice in a row? That be a positive or negative? So sitting at 6,426 votes, 51.6% yes, 48.4% no. I'd like to go around the table and see what you guys think about this. Do you feel like it would be positive or negative? Dwayne?
I don't have a strong opinion. It's frustrating when... It's mostly frustrating when there's just one overpowered deck that, you see over and over and over and over again, and it's very difficult to beat, because then that kind of encourages you to have two decks on ladder. It's basically, here's my deck when I know I'm gonna face that overpowered deck, and then once I face it, here's another deck that can try to beat anything else. I feel like that's a bit weird. I don't know. At the same time, in a more balanced meta, where there are, right now, I think that would be more interesting, because it's I really don't want to face against another Death Rattle Rogue, and, after you just face one, you know that you're not going to. I'm neutral on that topic.
You have to come down. Come on, yes or no? Let's get the answer out here.
No.
Okay. Mage?
So I think it ends up kind of skewing things if you end up getting this kind of situation where because of the last game you played, you're suddenly not going to see that class again. It feels like it would kind of potentially warp what it is you're seeing. And I mean, I think that part of it is a situation where if you know you're seeing a bunch of Face Hunter, you can tweak your deck to accommodate for those. And if you do, you actually can get rewarded for doing that and doing it properly. Whereas if you're suddenly guaranteed not to face the same class multiple times in a row, it suddenly takes some of that away. So I don't know. The only time it's a problem, like Nikolaya said, is when there's one dominating deck and then that's what everybody's playing. So then you get tons of mirror matches or you end up facing 9 shamans in a row or whatever the meme actually is. And then it kind of feels bad especially if you're trying to, come up with something new. But I don't know. I don't think this is something... I think this would be a negative overall. I think your matchmaking needs to represent what the whole of the meta actually is, wherever you happen to be at in the ladder.
Yeah, so that's a no. So
it's a no. I wouldn't want to see that either.
Okay. Yeah, I'm also firmly on the no bandwagon here, just because this is random. The ladder is randomly matched up. You get someone near your rank within a couple stars, and you play a game, whatever they play. So, like, I don't really want to be able to be like, okay, I played Rogue last game, so I know I'm not going to face a Rogue. And then it's just, I don't like the strategy. I'd rather just have a random deck that, you know, I want to play, and that I'm not going to be like, okay, well, I have a good chance of getting my butt kicked now because I played against Rogue last time, and this deck so gets good against Rogues. So I just don't like the train of thought. And I feel like overall, once if that was to be implemented, the community reaction would be great at first and then be extremely negative within days. I think it would not be a very positively received by the community. It sounds great. It sounds great when you stop and hear it. If you like, if we just got the shaman, we have the, you know, the batter, you know, like we've just gotten beaten up by, and we're still shaken up and terrified of Galakrond shaman and evolved shaman. So it's been shaman stone. And you're like, I would have loved it if I knew I wasn't going to face shaman after, you know, I just played shaman. But I don't think that applies now or the majority of the time. That I'd just rather see what I see, the whole meta.
I do want to say, I think it would be a better change if you're less likely to face the same class subsequently. I don't know if I'm saying that right. So like, if you face up against Rogue, then the next time you play, it's slightly less likely you're going to face Rogue, and then slightly less likely again after, like, the third. Because, what really bugs me is when you're, like, five games in a row of the same class. So I think that if they had something to make it, like, slightly less likely to a point where it's, like, you know, after five games, you're guaranteed to get a different class, I think that would be better. Because that doesn't happen very often, and that just kind of cancels out those feel bad moments and those, you know, screenshots on Twitter where it's like, I played 20 games and 19 of them were shaman or something like that, you know? Like, I think there is a way to make it a positive change, but I don't think that having the hard one-off, you know, I think that's a negative.
Yeah, so... Okay.
I will commend them for thinking about different ways to address matchmaking, and because there's been a lot of talk about the matchmaking, and they've been trying different things to make improvements to that, and I feel like there is some improvements there. You know, for new players, there definitely is, because there's a separate kind of 26 to 50 range now for brand new players, you know, some other things where I don't think you can queue. They implemented so you can't queue into the same person.
Yeah, I do have to say I am such a big fan of that change.
Yeah.
It's not something that people outside the top of the ladder really dealt with very often. Right. But I remember being in there. It's like, I'm facing this person for the fifth game in a row. Kill me.
Your purpose counter queuing.
Yeah.
Oh my god, it was so bad. It was so bad when you were queuing someone and then you counter queued, and then you got counter queued, and it's like, this is just ridiculous.
Yep.
It was insane. Like, I can't really put into great words if you weren't at the top of the ladder and didn't experience it like as frequently. Like, it was so infuriating.
Not experiencing myself, but watching streamers and different people do it and seeing what was happening and like purposely waiting and then still end up getting the same person and things like this. It was just like, oh, this just seems like it sucks.
You're basically forced to take like a 2-minute break after every game because you did not want to put it up against that person. And if they also took a 2-minute break, well,
Exactly.
So
it wasn't fun.
I like that they're thinking about these sorts of things and trying to come up with other ways that maybe we haven't considered before that would allow for an even better ladder experience.
For sure. Okay. So, and then finally, we have the first Vicious Syndicate meta report will be published on Sunday, December 29th. And then one more thing. We have we'll go ahead and link it when the podcast or the episode goes live. The HS replay infographic from, I think, December 12th to post nerf. Yeah. It's hilarious. It is good times.
Descent of Dragons has launched. You see, like, they kind of just time-lapse it in a GIF so you can see, like, literally the kind of how quickly Galakrond Shaman became powerful. And then you see some of the other decks kind of moving up and down for the amount of games being submitted by them. And then the thing that just gets me is seeing Face Hunter, because you see this just big, long Galakrond Shaman line, because it's a bar graph. And then you see Death Rattle Hunter start to eke up, getting closer and closer to where Galakrond Shaman is. And then, just like it was shot out of a cannon, Face Hunter comes flying up to right there neck and neck, and then eventually passes Galakrond Shaman.
It's zero
right
to
before
six.
The nerfs.
It's like zero and, to and 60. Then,
yeah.
It's crazy.
It was just like, what the heck is going on? But it was just amazing to see it. We talk about how quickly a meta can settle, but you literally can kind of see how that works, because you saw, you know, right at the very start, Highlander Mage was the most popular deck, and like very quickly, Galakrond Shaman got up there and then just took over.
Mm-hmm.
Just like everybody was saying, you know, it felt like after 2 days that Galakrond Shaman was the deck, and HS Replay collected data shows exactly that, and so it's really interesting to see. But to the point about Vicious Syndicate, they were going to release their first report on the 19th, which was the balance patch day, so all the data that they had collected prior to that they could have done a report on was suddenly completely void. You know, it wasn't going to be accurate, so they said, we're not going to do one on the 19th because the data doesn't matter, because we've got a new meta because of the balance changes. And so they announced today that they're gonna publish their first one now of Descent of Dragons on Sunday the 29th.
Nice. Okay, let's move into our main topic. Post-nerf meta. Let's take a look at the winners and losers. So we'll talk about, you know, kind of what the decks are for each class. But right now we have the best classes being Warrior, Hunter, Warlock, and the worst classes being Shaman, Paladin, and Mage. And let's kind of talk about what the decks we have for each one of these classes. So let's start out with Druid, and we have Embiggen Druid. Let's kind of run down what Embiggen Druid is trying to do. Obviously, it revolves around playing Embiggen. Shocker. Everyone's face is very shocked right now that I am making these assertions.
name checks out, actually.
It does, indeed. So,
Nicholas, did you say you've been playing this deck?
I was playing it for a bit. I got my 1,000 win druid this week playing Embiggen Druid. So I went from 0 to 2 in the span of like a week and a half. It seemed fine. I definitely wasn't playing a very refined version. I think that with some experimentation, it can definitely be at least like tier 2. It feels strong. Like, you're looking for either Breath of Dreams or Embiggen, and you're going to hit one of those cards fairly regularly. Whenever you hit one of those, the game feels a lot easier. But it can definitely win if you don't. It just has to be a little bit more careful planning, I guess.
How do you feel about the side quest in Embiggen Druid?
I ended up cutting it.
Okay.
I don't like it. I think it's bad, but
that's the,
a lot of lists have it.
That's the one that you spend mana.
Ten mana.
You get a free minion.
Yeah, it's called Strength in Numbers. I had it in for a while, and I ended up cutting it because I really just didn't like it.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. Actually, I should say it relies on you having Embiggen, and I assume if you don't have Embiggen in play, then that side quest is like a wet noodle, essentially.
Yeah, I also felt like I needed removal. Like I've cut it for swipe because I felt like I needed something to catch up on the board with in the case that I did lose it. Because the deck it's basically just minions. So having something to deal with, you know, a board of tokens or, you know, something to go along with a minion to try and get the board, it felt important to have. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. The bigger archetype, I should say, in Druid is Token Druid. So that one is using the Treant variant. So, you know, aeroponics, tree enforcements, Shrubadier.
they finally made it. They finally broke through for at least the early going now.
Okay. So the
most played list does have Mulch Muncher in it.
I was going to say.
Not all of them do.
Okay.
Not all of them do.
I saw a list on Ladder, and I'm going to issue a half sincere apology because I was at rank five, 0 stars. So I don't count that as a legitimate match on the ladder because you see the stupidest stuff at rank five at the bottom of the rank five floor. So, yes, I am sincerely sorry. Only half sincerely. Mulch Muncher. I did
somebody
see you.
Needs to queue into you with Token Druid at rank 4, and then you can get the
yes. If I see
full
it,
apology to exactly, Mulch Muncher.
Exactly. If I see it, if I see someone legitimately play it, I've seen lower ranked Token Druid, and I haven't seen that yet. So,
yeah. So, but yeah, Token Druid is the most. At least it's the strongest Druid deck right now. Which, I mean, when you do have Soul of the Forest, Savage Roar, the new Aeroponics is extremely strong.
Yeah.
Dendrologist, you know, some old cards that are finally actually seeing play. Plus, we still have Blessing of the Ancients. Like,
yeah,
that's still a good card. So
and Forest Aid just... Single yeah. card gets you a board, so it relies on doing the same thing Token Druid has always done, which is I'm going to play a board, and I'm going to keep getting a board until you can't clear the board, and then I'm going to buff it and Savage Roar it and hit you in the face.
Yeah, yep. The one problem with it really is Warriors is the best class, and most of the, and especially not the Galakrond version of it, runs Warpath.
I was going to say, hey, Token Drew, have you met my friend Warpath?
Yeah. Token Drew's going to be really happy in a couple of months when that rotates if the deck survives. So,
yeah, that's for
so
sure.
So my question is, how many points do you think Token Druid is getting by having the Dame Hazelbark hero portrait on while playing it?
I assume 50 to 60 points. It's big. It's least, big. I assume
at least a point or two. I have to think.
I assume
if you get creeped out by that look. I actually ran into it for the first time, and yeah, it does still looks kind of creepy, even though I know it's like the woman from World of Warcraft that does the really nice old woman, Tortolan woman, and she's like really sweet, and then you're like you're looking at this hero portrait, and you're just like. Those eyes are staring right through me.
I assume it increases the win rate by like 70-80% of any druid deck you're playing.
So you were using it, right?
No, I have not gotten it yet. I plan on getting it soon, but I have not gotten it.
Yeah. Okay. As a general rule, I don't buy packs when they cost more than $1 per. And in Canadian, it's like $33 for 30 packs. And it's like, no, thank you.
It's fair.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, moving on.
Hunter.
Face Hunter is back, boys.
It is the place, after all. Face is
it the place. It has exploded in popularity. I don't know what to think about it, to be honest. The data says that it's strong, and I've definitely lost to it a couple of times, but I don't know. It seems weird.
It feels like very old school, and like it doesn't, like, to me it doesn't feel good to play, and that's just like my opinion.
It feels weird where their game plan is like, I'm just going to hero power you turn 2, turn 3, turn 4, turn 5. And, like, hopefully you're not playing warrior or priest, you know?
Yeah.
because then your hero power just cancels out theirs. And it's like, okay, well, damn.
exactly.
I mean, it feels pretty easy to counter. And so, like, if you know what's going on, obviously, toxic reinforcement, if you get that on one and then can be not only hero powering, but hero powering with the advancement of the quest as well, it does sort of, like, get there. And like, so yeah. I played some games with it, and Phase Stalker is really good. If you could put that down and hero power the same turn, and you're advancing the quest as well, it just feels really, it feels strong. And it's a must answer when you see it played, because
oh yeah,
they don't want to be drawing their secrets. They want to be playing the secrets for free while doing 2 damage to your face by hero powering. And so you know, it got popular because it doesn't need minions on the board. The only minions it really wants on the board are minions that do damage when they die. So the toxic reinforcement gets you leper gnomes, and when they die, they hurt your opponent's face. You know, they're running they're running weapons. They're running the eagle horn bow. The phase stalker is to get the secrets out of their deck so that you're not actually playing them for cost. You're playing life drinkers. You're playing just all stuff that can go face, and you don't trade unless you absolutely have to. And it's amazing. It does get there a lot of times, especially if you don't, if you have a clunky draw, and just about any class can have a clunky draw. It can get there, and because its curve is so low, it just sort of and all it's doing is singularly focusing on hitting your opponent in the face.
Yep. So then let's look at who was the third winner? Warlock. So let's.
Oh, I thought we were going alphabetically.
Oh, we can go alphabetically. I was looking at the winners, but yeah. So let's go to Mage then, if we're going to stick with alphabetically. Highlander Dragon Mage.
This is the big loser of the expansion so far. I mean, it doesn't do very good against Face Hunter. It doesn't really do good against, you know, it only has so many board clears, and a lot of classes can make more and more, and a lot of classes are buffing their stuff, you know, Death Rattle Rogue, Galakrond Warrior, both have ways to buff their cards in hand. Zoo Warlock is buffing them on the board. Pirate Warrior, Face Hunter, Aggro. Mage historically has had a problem with Token Druid. There's just a lot of bad matchups for Mage right now. So it's not really getting a chance to play the game.
Yeah. I haven't seen a lot of Mage, and it doesn't feel very good to play these days. So,
it was a good deck before it got Dragon Queen Alexstrasza. It got the new Malygos. So it seemed like the pieces were there. It's just all of a sudden there ended up being all these aggressive decks.
Yeah.
And like the more controlling decks could just still push through the things that Mage could do. And it just, it seems crazy that even Zephyrus wasn't enough to keep it from kind of just falling off after the first couple days of the expansion.
Yeah, I was going to say, Highlander decks aren't nearly as present as they were before Descent of Dragons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what can you say? So let's go look at Paladin. It's Holy
the
Wrath Paladin.
Second worst class.
Yep. It's just Holy Wrath Paladin. There's nothing new. There's nothing really new to say about it. It's the same Holy Wrath Paladin you know and love, and it has Sathar
Var. Love to hate, maybe.
Yeah, I'm just paraphrasing my personal passions for Holy Wrath Paladin. Excuse me. I know it. I love it. And I'm still playing it because it's fun. But, yeah, I mean, it's basically the same 29 cards with Sathar Var. And you had Sathar Var in Doom in the Tomb, so it's not exactly like things are really all that much different. So
yeah, it's just the meta has shifted. You know, this was one of the best decks when Galakrond Shaman was a thing because it was too slow to actually outrace it. Now when you have, you know, a lot more mid-range decks or...
It doesn't do as well.
Yeah.
Or aggressive.
Yeah, like it doesn't really do well against Token Druid. I don't
know.
It doesn't do well, I don't believe, against Galakrond Warrior. I don't think it does well against Zoo. Basically any rogue is doing pretty decently against it, I think, as well. It's hard because I haven't actually seen very much of it, so I'm not 100% sure of the matchups, but like it's not winning a lot.
No, it historically doesn't do well against things with death rattles. It can clear one board, not so much the second one, and that's where Token and Rogue are kind of excelling right now.
Yeah, I mean, Rogue and Galakrond Warrior is buffing stuff in hand, and they can't really do that. And most of it, especially when it has charge or like, you know, with the Galakrond Warrior, they're dealing a lot of phase damage with every time they invoke, you know, so.
Exactly. So then we look at Priest.
It's not the worst class anymore.
Huzzah!
Oh my god. And they actually have a playable deck.
Quest Res.
Quest Resurrect Priest, yes.
Yeah. So.
You can play without the quest, but yeah, it's a resurrect. A resurrect thing.
Yeah,
most of the ones are running it.
I was playing a variant that didn't last Friday on stream that was provided. Phenom posted it, and it was running the same sort of things. You're running the water bearer. You're running the Convincing Infiltrator, you're running Kirin Tor, are the Karakut Defenders, and all that. And you're just trying to re-res all that stuff multiple times. You're leveraging Plague of Death to deal with Death Rattles, which is a really nice card to deal with Death Rattles, assuming they don't, you know, buff their Leroy and Stone Tusk Boar by +12/+12 by turn 7. Then you're just, you could be at 30 health and then they just hit you for 31 and you're dead. But it's still actually pretty good. Then you get the mass resurrection to resurrect things. The deck I was running had Vargoth in it. So it leverages, it's really nice if you have Vargoth in the mass res pool and it comes back because you get multiple mass reses.
It still feels very similar to how it was before the patch. It's not that much different.
Yeah, it just doesn't have, you know, Nazoth anymore.
Or like, exactly.
And Combo Priest is still playable. Yeah. It's not nearly as popular. And Galakrond Priest is, I don't see a single deck over 50% win rate, so don't play it.
Yeah, it's not good. Turns out, like we said, random priest minions, not that good.
All it's trying to do is, like, kill all the minions on your opponent's board, and that doesn't actually mean that you win the game.
Exactly. So. You run out of removal, they smack you in the face.
Rogue is the most diverse class, really.
Yeah,
they
have for sure.
Death Rattle Rogue, Galakrond Rogue, Death Rattle Galakrond Rogue, Death Rattle Galakrond Highlander Rogue.
My head's spinning.
Or just Highlander Galakrond Rogue without the Death Rattles. Like, yeah.
Yeah. As we speculated, it turns out now that people can play the game and have minions on the board, that the Rogue's Galakron and invoking Galakron in Rogue is really strong. And
yeah, it's mostly coming down to the Necrom Apothecary. A lot of the games is just, do you draw it or not? You know, when you do draw it, it's one of the strongest decks in the game. And when you don't, it's one of the worst, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the four, it has a, one moment. Rogue as a whole is 50% win rate, which is kind of in line with this. Like 50% of the time you draw it, but I think actually that's what the stats are. I think if you're hard mulliganing for it, I think you get Necrom Apothecary on turn four about 50% of the time.
And you win those games.
And yeah, you tend to win those games. And the times that you don't, you tend to lose them. So there is like the... If you're not playing with the Death Rattle stuff, Galakrond itself is doing pretty decently. Having big questings, Leroy Burst, and, you know, just classic Rogue stuff, it's still doing fine.
Yeah, it's got a nice tempo package, and being able to draw up to four cards that cost zero if you fully invoked Galakrond can create some really ridiculous... really ridiculous plays. And you can also run Hyperion Togwaggle, which pairs really well with Galakrond, because the Galakrond hero power, every time you invoke you get a lackey, and they work really well, and one of the reasons you would run Hyperion Togwaggle was for the wand that got you three cards that cost zero. So it's you can really draw through your deck pretty well, and it allows you to just kind of do all the things that Rogue is really good at doing, and Flick Skyshift is actually a really, really nice card as well. I was a little disappointed opening it as part of my gold bundle pre-order, but having played it now a little bit, I am very happy that I have him. He is just a very strong card, and definitely worth... He's going to be in whichever version of the Rogue that you're playing.
Yep. So then we look at Shaman. Galakrond, I mean, it's slower. It's not as good.
It's basically the only thing that Shaman has going for it now. I have still seen it. It's fine, which is, you know, when a deck is just fine, it's normally not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, whenever they have the busted draws, you know, it's still very strong, but that doesn't happen a lot. And they tend to be losing to aggro more. So, yeah, I like how the nerfs have impacted this deck a lot. It definitely feels more fair.
You're not seeing it 50%+ of the games when you're queuing in at right around legend anymore.
Yeah. So then we have Warlock.
And one of the winners. Yeah, Zoo and Handlock.
I've played like 30 games of Handlock, and I'm still not quite sure what it's supposed to do in the end game. Like, it's just, I don't know. It just seems very reliant on getting down the Mountain Giants early and then drawing up your hand and then using that 6-mana 2/2 that summons the bigger taunt demons.
Abyssal Summoner.
Yeah, Abyssal Summoner.
All the lists that I'm seeing have Alexstrasza and Malygos in them.
Okay, that's not how I was running it. So
yeah, so I think what their plan is to like get you down low and then using like Nether Breath and Soulfire as burst. Which I don't know about. Yeah. So if you discount it with Frizz, Malygos down to 7, then you can go Nether Breath plus Soulfire, and that's 18.
Yeah, 17. Right, it's 4-9 for Nether Breath, 8 for Soulfire, so 17.
They both deal 8 damage. It's 16.
Wait. No, it's 9. Soulfire, it's 18. You're 18. I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. They have plus 5. Yeah. Yeah, so they both deal 4 damage and they both get plus 5, so it's 9. So it's 18 damage. Which when you set them down to 15, you know, you tend to win.
Yeah.
With Alexstrasza. So yeah, I don't know. It seems interesting. It's very reliant on hitting
Frizz on Malygos,
which I don't know how they win without that, but they seem to be, I guess. So yeah,
I need to go back and re-examine that deck because I was having fun with it because it definitely reminded me of old school Handlock. So, like, I enjoyed it.
They're running the new dragon. As well.
Yeah, Zoraku the Warped.
So, yeah, that's an alternate win condition. Again, something that gets reduced by Frizz if you've played it before getting it into your hand. And so that's another way that, you know, you could potentially win with this deck as well. But yeah, it's scary when you see Frizz come down and know that they have not only the new dragon, but also now I guess they have Malygos and ways of doing 18 damage along with Alexstrasza. So
yep. And then Zulok.
Yeah, we're seeing
Galakrond is getting put in Zulok decks. I think a lot less for Galakrond and more so what the invokes do.
I mean, this is one that I'm really weirded out by.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's that good. I'll have to, like, actually, I might have to play it some to actually see how it is. But it doesn't seem very strong. And we were looking at the deck on HS Replay before. And once you hit, like, the higher up the ladder you go, its win rate starts to plummet. So like as a whole it's like 57.6 or something, and then when you get to Legend it's like barely over 51 or something, 52. Uh-huh. Which like definitely feels like a deck that's, you know, you don't want to be playing if you're trying to make a Legend push or trying to get like top Legend. Like it just seems really bad against people who know what they're doing, you know.
And then finally, let's ring the bell for Warrior. Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner.
The biggest winner. We traded Shaman Stone for Warrior Stone, kind of. Where have I heard that before? Actually, it was the other way around.
Yeah,
Galakrond Warrior and Pirate Warrior are basically two of the strongest decks right now. I think Galakrond Warrior is actually the strongest deck right now.
I would agree.
And Pirate Warrior is not far behind.
Yeah. The Warrior got a lot of really, really good cards in the expansion.
There's also a Highlander version of Galakrond Warrior as well. That's actually pretty solid as well. I was watching Jambre play it, and I think you want to just go with the regular Galakrond deck if you're doing it, but there's definitely some interesting things you can do if you're doing a Highlander version.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, Zephyrus makes Highlander decks. Yeah.
Dragon Queen, obviously.
Exactly. Yeah, Alexstrasza is a solid addition to any Highlander deck, so it definitely makes sense. So,
but basically, so as far as Pirate Warrior goes, it does exactly what you think. It plays a bunch of pirates. It plays the Arcanite Reaper. The new Horde Pillager makes it so you basically never run out of them as long as you've drawn one. Ankar is really good draw, and then, you know, Leroy Cork runs, you know, kind of finish it off. It's basically what you would expect.
The Sky Raider is really good too, the 1-mana 1/2 that gives you a free pirate to your hand. Just, I mean, unlike previous iterations of Pirate Warrior, it takes a lot more to empty your hand, unless you have a really kind of clunky draw where you draw a bunch of weapons or different things like that.
Yeah, for sure. It has a lot of gas.
Yeah.
It is kind of reliant on drawing Ankar, but the games that you do draw tend to be blowouts, especially if you can kind of transition that into the Arcanite Reaper upgrade, Leroy, you know?
Yeah.
But Galakrond Warrior is extremely flexible in what cards you can put in. Like, there's probably like 5 or 6 slots that you can just open for tech cards. You know, if you want to go for the hyper value, you can have like Voon and Barista. You know, that's the version I've been playing. If you want more removal, you can have the Plague of Wrath, and Spellbreakers to kind of deal with the rogues.
Exactly. That's what I was just thinking.
Acidic Swamp Ooze is great for dealing with that Dragon's Claw. You know. After the opponent plays Galakrond, you know, Leroy is, especially when you draw that, you know, it becomes 10 damage plus invoking and hero powering is a lot more damage. There's a lot of different ways you can take it. All of them seem pretty decent, so.
Yeah, I would agree. They seem pretty strong.
We also see some of them running Armorsmith to try and be more defensive against, you know, the face hunters and the aggro decks. Yeah, like I said, there's like 4 or 5 different ways you can take it. There's probably like 6 different tech cards that you can try and mold your game plan towards, based off what you're seeing. So That's why I think it's the best deck. It's just the core, like, 24 cards or whatever it is are very solid, and then you can kind of mold those final cards to be exactly how you want that deck to play out.
It's really solid no matter how you slice it.
Scion of Ruin is a ridiculous card, and if you pair it with the Barista, it is a godly good.
Yes,
that is the definition of value is doing that sort of thing, and it is, yeah, it's got enough rush minions that you can kind of control the board along with your hero power. The invokes kind of work well insofar as helping to clear opponents' minions, as well as some of them do the awaken does damage to your own board. So if you're using Acolytes, you're using the Armorsmiths, you actually can add armor, draw cards, different things like that. That, you know, some of the reasons you were potentially running Warpath or different things like, or Whirlwind or something back in the past.
Yep. And that's pretty much kind of a quick rundown of the meta since the patch. So you want to go over this week's poll question, Mage?
Sure. So we asked, because there was a lot of discussion about the Necrium Apothecary, around the time the balance patch was announced last week. We would like to know, do you think the Necrium Apothecary, the 4-mana 2/5 combo card that says draw a death rattle minion from your deck and gain its death rattle, should that have been nerfed along with the shaman changes that were implemented last week? Simple yes or no question. Lots of discussion about it from both pro players and streamers and different things like that. So we want to know your opinion on that. And we will talk about your responses on next week's show. Guys, what do you think real quick?
I'm fine with it. I think it's strong, but there's still a lot. Like Nikolai said, it's like a 50% chance to draw by turn 4. I feel like it's good. I think it's really strong, but I don't think it should be nerfed personally.
It's more of a feels bad card than like, obviously it is very strong, but when you're completely revolving your entire deck around, you know, one card and hoping that you draw it, it's just a feel bad card. I think that it is strong. I don't think that it's oppressive. You can tack in ways to deal with it. Yep. If you're having a problem, you can tack in as many silence and polymorphs and hexes and earth shocks and whatever the heck you want to deal with it, and it's fine. So, okay. Yeah.
Sounds good. Well, we will get the rest of you and get your opinions, and we will talk about those responses on next week's show.
Perfect. Speaking of the show, you can find the show on Twitter at Dr3HS. You can find our Discord on our Twitter as the top pinned tweet. You can email us at dr3hs@gmail.com. And you can find me at Derek Alkaline. Nikolaus?
You can find me on Twitter at Nikolaus123.
And Mage.
You can find me in our Discord along with Nikolaus and Daring Alkaline. You can find me on Twitter at Major Death, and Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you can find me at twitch.tv/majordeath.
All right, guys, and that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks for tuning in, and as always, you've been listening to Dr. 3. And real quick, happy holidays, everyone. Have a good new year, too.
Happy holidays. Boom.
Boom. Happy holidays.